China recently began its own cap-and-trade program, much like the Regional Greenhouse Gas Emission Program, or REGI, which involves a number of northeastern and mid-Atlantic states. It's aimed at reducing the airborne ingredients that are blamed for climate change. For more on what it means for China and the worldwide efforts to fight climate change, we spoke with Paula DiPerna, a special advisor with CDP North America. It's a not-for-profit that runs the global environmental disclosure systems for investors, companies, cities, states, and regions. She says the Chinese cap-and-trade program actually began to take shape 25 years ago.
The Framework Convention on Climate Change was signed in 1992 at the famous Rio Summit, which was the original source of the Paris Agreement. It was the Rio Conference created the Framework Convention, which is the international legal framework that provided the authority for the Paris Agreement to go forward. The difference is that in 92 in Rio, the developed countries made an agreement that they would start reducing their emissions first, and the developing countries, including China, could wait for a given period of time. And there was a legal agreement that the Chinese could hold off, and there was a handshake, and then this was much maligned and much very poorly interpreted in later years to give the impression the Chinese were getting off scot-free. But, of course, that had been part of the original agreement. So you roll forward to 1997, you have the Kyoto Protocol, again, much maligned and misinterpreted to the public as if, again, China was getting away with murder in terms of air pollution. But, again, they had been given this extra time. So you keep on rolling forward. So 92... So then you have these conference of the parties who were who are parties to the Framework Convention. So now we went up to conference of the parties 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all these annual meetings all the way up to Paris in 2015. And at that point, the climate change problem had become so acute and so frightening that now all the countries of the world, developing and developed, agreed that they would take some specific and concrete action. So China came to Paris with the intention of taking a leadership position and in alignment with the Obama administration. So the Obama administration, of course, took a leadership role in the Paris Agreement, brought the Clean Power Plan to Paris as a U.S. contribution that we would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by X, before X. And then the Chinese came with this idea of a national cap and trade, and they made a commitment that they would develop a national cap and trade. But they've been at this now, for a decade. They've been really thinking about it. I was part of starting the first of their pilot programs of pilot carbon markets in 2008, which was really even before REGI. We have a cap and trade here in the United States in the Northeast Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, as well as one in California. And I was also part of the Chicago Climate Exchange, which preceded even those two, and that was a national voluntary system. So the cap-and-trade framework exists in the United States, just not national. So the Chinese brought the plan of a national cap-and-trade for China to the Paris Agreement and put it on the table as their contribution.
What are the challenges of the world's most populous nation imposing this cap and trade? I mean, certainly other countries do it, and they have to tighten their belts economically, perhaps. But when you're talking about a country as large and as populous as China that has been moving ahead with huge infrastructure projects and an economy that's been growing rapidly, how do they implement this without putting the brakes on what they've been doing?
Well, you can never have too much energy efficiency. I mean, free energy, cheap energy. We've been polluting the atmosphere for free for 100 years. And every ton of atmospheric pollution you emit has a price tag. It's as if you were driving a car and you think you're alone in your car, and you turn around and you have three hitchhikers, and you ask yourself, how did you get in my car? Well, every ton of emissions has invisible hitchhikers, costs that have never been illuminated. So on some level, the Chinese economy has been self-subsidizing with cheap energy. And what the cap-and-trade is going to do is remove that self-subsidy and make visible some of these hidden costs, which include air pollution, poor health, and waste. So the cap-and-trade will attack the waste first, and that will not hurt the economy. It will help the economy. I mean, here in the United States, in the absence of any national intelligently comprehensive energy plan. We just waste energy. We're ready to shoot toxic chemicals into our water to liberate gas, you know, through hydrofracking, liberate the gas, potentially contaminate water, and then waste the gas. So that, you know, doesn't compute. That without an energy efficiency program, you're carrying a lot of waste. A cap and trade really is an incentive to, one, find the cheapest, the most efficient use of energy, and then secondly, you know, China's made tremendous commitments. They're, you know, they obviously already the leading producer of solar panels in the world. They've made a commitment to basically remove combustion engines from the streets, which is going to stimulate their hybrid and electric vehicle production. So they've the important thing is that the national cap and trade in China is basically an integrated green economy plan. They are greening their economy step by step. And the cap and trade is the first major step forward on this long-term initiative of greening their economy.
Paula DePerna is a special advisor with CDP North America, a not-for-profit that runs the global environmental disclosure systems for investors, companies, cities, states, and regions.